Recently, the Connecticut Forensic Lab had data revealing that impaired driving cases will sometimes, actually more than half the time, it sounds like, have the presence of drugs. So just to go back a second, starting October 1st, as part of a new program with the State Department of Transportation and the Connecticut Highway Safety Office, the Connecticut Forensic Lab started testing when you were pulled over and if you were being tested for drunk driving. Those tests were also looking for the presence of drugs. And the results were pretty alarming, to be honest. And the reason I'm so fascinated by this story is because when Connecticut decided to legalize marijuana, there was all this fear about impaired driving and more cases happening because you've got legalized marijuana, weed. And not necessarily that this data is showing that that may be the case. That's why we have Dr. Gleba joining us, because I'd like to know a little bit more about the exact figures and kind of the biggest takeaways with this. But I think it finally is the first time that you could speak some truth to this narrative of whether or not, you know, legalizing marijuana, for example, could have been something that impacts our driving cases where people are under the influence and getting behind the wheel. And so I wanted to talk more about this, get more information. And so we welcome to the show Dr. Jessica Gleba, again, Director of Forensic Laboratory Operations. This is with the Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection's Division of Scientific Services. Dr. Gleba, thank you so much for coming on the show. We appreciate your time.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
All right. So could you start by just sharing some of your key takeaways? Because I found this data to be obviously very alarming, but I also thought could be a real turning point when it comes to addressing the issues we're having with people, impaired drivers in particular, and you know, crashes or unfortunately deadly cases on our roadways.
Sure. Yeah. So like you mentioned, as of October 1st, the forensic lab here, we started testing all cases for the presence of drugs. So what we have been seeing, you know, in those as well as the last 2 years, is an increase in drugs on board with alcohol, and specifically an increase in the number of like what we consider designer drugs. So fentanyl analogs or designer benzodiazepines. And it's standing out mostly because we're not just seeing one drug with combined with alcohol. We're often seeing multiple drugs used together and then alcohol on top of it. So the big one that we've been talking about is carfentanil. You know, it's 100 times more potent than fentanyl. Just a few years ago, you know, the big thing we were talking about was carfentanil and its consumption, something as small as a grain of salt, that could lead to overdose and death. And we're actually seeing it now in DUI cases. And often in combination with other drugs. So we're not just seeing it on its own. You had mentioned some stats before. You know, we had pulled some numbers. In 2025 alone, 14% of the cases we tested here had 10 or more drugs present.
Wow.
Yeah, which is an increase. In 2022, we were only seeing about 6% of cases. And then about 50% had more than five drugs on board. So we are definitely seeing an increase in that. And, you know, the biggest thing, our takeaway that we've seen from the October-November data is a lot of over-the-counter medication. So things that people might not consider of question, mixing with alcohol or, you know, driving with like antidepressants like Zoloft, Celexa, something like Benadryl. Those are popping up pretty consistently. And they do lead to increased impairment, especially when combined with alcohol.
So what you're saying, Dr. Gleba, is even if you have a prescription that you're consistently using, doctor approved it, you did nothing wrong, it's all good. But when you mix it with alcohol, that becomes a real issue. You know, obviously alcohol in general, a real issue when you're driving. But that, you know, just creates a bigger danger. And do you think people realize that? Do you think people realize when they go out and have a drink or two, but they're also still taking their antidepressants, that's a real problem?
I don't think people notice it, which is why we wanted to bring attention to it, you know, kind of educate on it, because it is something, you know, you are prescribed it, you are given it. There are a lot of over-the-counter medications that people take on a daily basis that most of us don't even think of when it comes to combining it with other things.
I'm curious. So you said carfentanil.
Yes.
I have to be honest. I've heard of it just as a journalist, but I don't know an awful lot about that. How do you get access to that? Not that I'm looking by any means, but I think when you hear, you know, so fentanyl, I'm very familiar with people lacing, you know, drugs that you could get either on the internet, even honestly, marijuana, sometimes if you're not getting it from a credible place, which is one of the biggest reasons why Connecticut decided to legalize it, honestly, was so that we could get it away from people illegally getting it, crossing state lines, or even going to sketchy drug dealers, to be honest. And so you didn't want them lacing it with things like fentanyl, rat poison, right? So I've heard that. Carfentanil, I have not heard an awful lot about, though. I don't know a lot of, you know, I don't have a lot of context with that one.
So it is a veterinary large animal tranquilizer. However, it is not used in that manner anymore. So it used to be something that you could get your hands on somewhere. The big thing with it now is it's being manufactured. So instead of, you know, manufacturing fentanyl illicitly, the other fentanyl analogs as well and carfentanil are just being made, you know, by these dealers, and they're cutting it into fentanyl, into other drugs to be able to give that better high.
Interesting. But that's they're getting it mostly, again, not knowing, kind of like fentanyl. I don't know of people who are usually, when you hear about these cases, it's not like they are ordering fentanyl. It's something that is, you know, again, kind of in secrecy, is laced in the drugs a lot of the time. So that seems to be the same issue with carfentanyl.
Correct.
Got it. Okay. Can you tell that I am clearly not a drug user? Because I have to, like, literally, I have to understand. Well, because I think when we say that, you know, that we're seeing that appear in more lab drug test samples than really any other. I can get behind understanding the whole, you know, don't mix your medications that a doctor prescribed to you. Don't mix antidepressants. Like, that I understand, because I certainly know that we, you know, I've highlighted it certainly. But I think in our country in general, more and more people are being told to get on medications for things like depression and anxiety and all that. So I'm not shocked at that so much. But the carfentanil threw me, to be honest. That was shocking to me, because I don't even know if people realize that, you know, they could be using that drug and that it's in their system. That's correct. The part that's shocking.
Yes. And honestly, a lot of it speaks to tolerance of users now. You know, fentanyl a few years ago, it was a very low concentration you were seeing, and that's what people were replacing at that time Percocet or oxycodone with. And now that fentanyl has been so much in the market, people's tolerances have really increased to the drugs that they're using. So the dealers have to come up with other solutions. And that's where you're coming up with the carfentanil, where, you know, they can give that user kind of the high they're looking for because of tolerance in these individuals.
Wow. Dr. Jessica Gleba is here, Director of Forensic Laboratory Operations with DESPP, that is the Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection. It's their Division of Scientific Services. And recently there was an announcement about a report, kind of data that looks at both October and November numbers. So I want to just again remind folks that this was just testing that was done during 2 months of this year. Dr. Gleba, you had actually mentioned it earlier in this conversation that you were comparing what, 2025 numbers, again, over 2 month period, to, was it 2022 numbers?
Correct. So those numbers were actually just looking at drugs in general across 2025, not just the last 2 months. The last 2 months is kind of where we had indicated we're testing all cases for drugs. So okay. We've actually increased the amount of testing we're doing, but we have been looking for drugs in lower alcohol cases historically.
So I was fascinated by this because one of the things that I've noticed, you know, again, in tracking if people are under the influence behind the wheel, one of the issues that we found when Connecticut decided to, again, legalize marijuana was the fact that state police said we don't have an accurate or effective way, essentially, to test for that. So if you're pulled over, obviously we know how you could be tested for alcohol. But talk to us a little bit about, you know, so this new program, again, I know it's Department of Transportation, Highway Safety Office, so I know it's not, you know, the Connecticut Forensic Lab, but I'm curious about the the testing. Like, how does that work? So they do like a breathalyzer or something, or what are they doing that you guys are then able to test to see if there's drugs in the system as well?
So part of the program is just previous to October 1st, anything that was submitted to the lab, we had run for an alcohol test. And based on the alcohol level, so whether or not it was greater than or less than an 0.8, would determine if we did further testing for drugs. So what we have done as of October 1st is, regardless of the alcohol level, we are looking for those drugs. So what's happening is, if someone's being pulled over for a DUI, and a biological sample has been taken, whether it's urine or blood, they are then submitted here to the lab, and we are doing the additional testing for drugs on those, regardless of the ethanol level.
I think that's so brilliant. I don't know if that takes up more time or money, but I think that, to your point earlier, I think that medication is becoming so readily available. Even if it's not prescribed, people are able to just honestly do it from an internet search. So I think it's brilliant that we've decided to incorporate this type of testing. Did you get any indication of when these samples are being looked at? Like, do we have any kind of idea of how often marijuana is traced, like, in these cases? So I know obviously we were talking about carfentanil being one, the increase in prescribed medications, sure. But did you see a lot of marijuana traced in any of these samples?
So it's kind of twofold. So over the last, like, we track all of our trends for everything we're looking for. So over the last, like, 2 or 3 years, marijuana has been consistently in, like, our top one or two drugs that we're seeing in all cases that we've tested. As far as the data from October and November, when we're looking at high ethanol levels, we aren't, based on what we have seen, again, it's very limited data, we aren't seeing a lot of marijuana being detected in the high ethanol cases. But in the drug panels we've tested in the previous 3 years, it always comes up in our top five drugs.
Which makes a lot of sense. The other thing that I think is important is, you are getting these samples, correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Gleba, but I believe you just said you're getting these samples because people were pulled over for drinking and driving, essentially. So they're getting tested to see if alcohol is in their system, which to me would mean that there are a lot of undetected impaired drivers who maybe don't have alcohol in their system at all, but were solely, you know, maybe using drugs, or were solely high behind the wheel. Right. I mean, I think that's the kind of gray area with this, is that we're only going based off of people who are also drunk behind the wheel. But there's a huge population, potentially, maybe there's not, but there's kind of this unknown of, how do we know how many people are getting high behind the wheel? I feel like that is kind of the golden question, especially since we legalized marijuana, and it's been, I think, brought up a lot by people who oppose the legalization of it. But I don't know if there's an accurate way to get that, because right now we're still just going off of people who are being tested for drinking and driving.
So when an officer is pulling someone over, they're pulling them over not necessarily just for the presence of alcohol. They're pulling it over because they have an indication that the person is impaired. So we do have the state of Connecticut's, like, DRE program, the Drug Recognition Experts. So, as well as this field sobriety test. And again, that's not within the lab, so I can only speak to it in general terms. But if you are pulled over and an officer does not suspect that it's alcohol that you're being impaired by, they can perform these field sobriety tests, as well as call out to the drug recognition experts to have them then evaluate for the presence of drugs. So regardless of being pulled over, it's not just for alcohol.
So are you seeing, I guess, test results ever where people are just high and there's no alcohol? The reason I'm asking you, Dr. Gleba, I'm sorry that you probably feel like you're the messenger in this, but I always am looking for, you know, what narrative is totally true, partially true, not really true at all. And the biggest argument I would say opponents have, who don't like that we legalize marijuana, is that we're going to see more and more bad driving or bad driving incidents, crashes, deadly collisions, because people are high behind the wheel. And I just don't know if that, in fact, is an issue Connecticut is facing right now since we legalized a few years ago.
So it's kind of twofold. So I would say based on the numbers we've had, we have not seen an increase in marijuana in samples since the legalization for what we are seeing here at the lab. And as well as, you know, we about 50% plus of the cases that we get in don't have alcohol in their system.
Interesting.
You know, just based on previous numbers, again, that's when the alcohol level is less than an 0.8. We were always testing for drugs. So about 50% of those cases were coming in for looking for drugs only. I don't have a number on the percentage of those that were completely negative or no drugs were detected. But we do get quite a few cases that do not have alcohol on board.
Interesting. Okay. And would you say now... this is probably even more in the weeds, Dr. Gleba, but are you finding that these are mostly young drivers or is it across the board?
That we don't have that information.
Okay.
So all the stuff that comes to us is pretty
blind.
Get
a sample.
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's fine. No worries. I don't mean to like totally put all of this on you. But I am curious because again, it's very hard when you get off the cuff of, oh, this is why things are getting out of control. And it's like, okay, but how much of that is actually true? And then, oh, it's the younger generation. Okay, but how much of that is actually accurate? So that's why I ask those questions. But I do appreciate because I think you have a wealth of knowledge and you've shared an awful lot with us. And I think regardless, no matter what the numbers are showing, we know there's a problem. Right. I mean, I think we can agree that no matter what the numbers are showing, we clearly have an issue with impaired driving in Connecticut.
Correct.
Yeah. So we can agree on that. I think that's very true. Dr. Gleba, I want to thank you for the work that you do. It's incredible with the Connecticut Forensic Lab. And I thank you so much for sharing all of this here on WICC. I'd love to have you back on the show in future. Whenever these types of results come out, I think it's important to get that information out to people. So would love to have you back on the show anytime.
Oh, I would happily come back.
Great.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, Dr. Jessica Gleba, I appreciate you again. And she is the director of the Forensic Laboratory Operations with the Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection's Division of Scientific Services right here on WICC.